Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. We're excited to have with us this week Donna Freitas, a professor at Boston University. Welcome, Donna.
Thanks for having me.
Donna is the author of Sex and the Soul, Juggling Sexuality, Spirituality, Romance, and Religion on America's College Campuses, which is being published by Oxford University Press this April, and she's agreed to come in and chat with us a bit about this. Donna, maybe you can talk just quickly about how you came up with the idea for this book.
Well, I've been writing about dating and sexuality among young adults and religion for a long time, and I taught a course actually on dating at the college I used to work at, St. Michael's College, and it made quite a splash on campus. And what happened was in the class, the students began questioning themselves and their own behavior with regard to sex and hookup culture on campus. And about midway through the class, just after spring break actually, they started to talk about how unhappy they were with some of the different behaviors they were participating in and the party culture on campus. And they were looking toward theology and spirituality for a way to almost dig themselves out of it. And I was really fascinated by both their admission that something was wrong and that it took one person to say it first, and then the rest of them all chimed in about how they were unhappy. They were also afraid to admit that they weren't excited about hookup culture like they thought they were supposed to. And once they all sort of came out and admitted it, they wanted to change the world. They wanted to change the campus. So it was that experience that led me to wonder if other students on other campuses were experiencing similar disconnects or similar anxieties with regard to sex and romantic unfulfillment, and then maybe thinking about spirituality and religion as a way out.
So this book is based on a series of visits you did at how many colleges?
I went to 7 colleges, 2 evangelical, 2 Catholic, 2 private secular, and 1 public.
Okay, and you did interviews with students at all of these schools?
I did. I interviewed 111 students, wow. So in-depth interviews.
And these were not just one-on-one interviews, but you also had these folks keeping journals, correct?
Yes. The journal was optional, and I think it was about 108 of the students out of the 111 I interviewed chose to do the journals. And then I got the pool of students that I interviewed through a survey that went out on all these campuses, and over 2,500 students took that survey. So I actually originally was hoping for 150 participants per school. That was my goal.
Wow.
And so it really went far beyond my wildest dreams.
Maybe you could describe the contours of this hookup culture that you've mentioned. Some of our listeners may not be too familiar with it.
Well, I actually asked students to talk about hookup culture. What is hookup culture exactly? And hooking up, it seems, can range from anything from a kiss to having sex. Generally, the key to what it makes it a hookup is that there's no commitment. But part of what the students encounter in hookup culture, it varies from school to school. And I should say that when I talk about hookup culture, you need to bracket evangelical Christian colleges. They don't have a hookup culture, not in the way that I encountered it everywhere else. But essentially, you just have a real pressure, especially for men, to essentially have as many uncommitted encounters, sexual encounters, as possible with women. And for women, many women see hookup culture as this scenario they have to participate in order to eventually find a relationship. And so they have to hook up with as many people as possible with the hopes of, finding someone who might then actually be willing to go out with them. Part of the hookup culture, probably one of the most disturbing parts that I encountered, which I assume might shock parents if they haven't heard about it already, is some of the parties, the party culture that has developed, which I would say that it's based on what I call the now classic theme party, which is pimps and hoes. And there's this culture where people have these theme parties and people dress up for them. And essentially they're centered around women dressing as whores and being called whores, actually, as part of a theme. And so you have men in the positions of power and women in positions of in submissive postures, essentially, and men living out, in many ways, pornographic fantasies on campus at these parties. And I found them everywhere I went but the evangelical colleges. So that was one of the most intense things I think I found in hookup culture, women trying to navigate somehow.
Now, you found this at Catholic schools as well as secular schools.
Oh, yes. So, and I should say, you know, as an aside, there are other kinds of theme parties, like ugly sweater parties and stuff that people talked about.
A little tamer, right?
Yes. But just about everywhere I went, there's also lingerie parties. There's just there are all these parties that are essentially designed to get women to show up virtually naked. A lot of the students talked about how at these parties, there's often more drinking. It happens far faster than at other parties. And there's the hooking up is far more charged. It's far more present. So people go to these parties expecting to drink faster, expecting to hook up right away.
And as you said, I mean, in Catholic schools, I mean, there are certain restrictions on like, for example, some secular schools, men and women share hallways, sometimes even share bathrooms. But there are more restrictions at Catholic schools. But it seems like this doesn't have as the intended effect, perhaps.
Well, I at the Catholic schools that I visited, it didn't seem to make a difference. There were ways to get around the system, so to speak, propping doors being one, which is a very simple one. So but students talked about that. So I think at some schools, I used to work for residence life for 6 years, so I know what it's like to work in the residence halls. And, you know, it will depend on the school how strictly these rules are enforced. And so I'm sure there are schools where these rules really are meaningful, but they certainly weren't at the schools that I visited. In some ways, I think the separation, I'm not sure which way is better, to be honest. Sometimes I think the separation of men and women seemed to even further charge the environment and further challenge the men to get into the women's halls, to be honest.
Now, some writers like Colleen Carroll Campbell have written about, you know, what they call a new orthodoxy on campus, where there is, among at least some Catholic students, a desire for more traditional lifestyle relationships. Did you encounter any of that?
Not in my interviews, no. And I did encounter a couple of students who were far more devout, I guess you could say, than others in their Catholicism, but not the kind of Catholic that Colleen Carroll is talking about. I do believe that they're there. I think I've, even now that I'm a professor at Boston University, I'm encountering that in, I guess, the Catholic subculture of BU. Except they didn't show up for my study. And I think it really depends on the schools that you go to. I think at certain schools you will find, I think it's there, but I don't think it's at your average Catholic college. And certainly I just didn't happen to survey any of those students or anyone who really represented that population during the study.
In fact, in the interviews you conduct, many of the students were fairly negative about their Catholic upbringing. Who do you think is to blame in all that? I mean, these people say, a lot of them said they were, you know, quote unquote, forced to go to church. What's going wrong here?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, so many of the students, when I would bring up their Catholic background and then ask them questions specifically about the faith, there was a lot of eye rolling that went on that I couldn't quite convey on the page in the book, but it was very common. One of the real differences I saw between the way that Catholic youth, or at least, you know, the students who identified as having a Catholic background talked about their background and their Catholic present, if they had one, in comparison to the evangelical Christians I interviewed, is this huge difference in the way they experience faith growing up. And, you know, the common evangelical Christian upbringing involves being part of youth groups. And we're talking about youth groups like starting in kindergarten, you know, that they really stick with all throughout, you know, their lives through middle school, through high school, that are really their social network. It's not just their faith network. Their faith and their social lives are totally intertwined, and it's very meaningful to them. And it's, I think it's a lot of fun. Like there was a real, I think among evangelical Christians, some of the big struggle that they encountered was when they went to college, they had to leave their youth group, and they had to sort of start over. And that was one of the challenges they faced. And there was virtually none of that with the Catholics that I interviewed. They didn't have any experience really with youth group, and there doesn't seem to be a real organized outreach, or at least a widespread outreach to Catholic young adults. And so when they get to college, it seems that all they've gotten is church and CCD, and that's something that their parents made them do. It was kind of almost a forced, you know, they feel like it's indoctrination almost. They've been indoctrinated with certain things, and they've been made to do certain things, and it doesn't seem to, it's not integrated into the rest of their life.
Now let's talk a little bit about these evangelical schools. How did your experience there compare to your experience at Catholic schools?
The most startling aspect, in addition to the fact that all of the students were so articulate about their faith, so expressive about their faith, their ability to, you know, talk critically about their faith and how it affected their lives, it was just extraordinary in comparison to the other students that I interviewed everywhere else. But I think one of the most distinguishing factors on those campuses is how much faith and education and social life is so, everything is integrated on those campuses. And, you know, if you're in biology class or American literature, or if you're, you know, participating in student government, or, you know, if you're going to chapel, what everything is integrated. Everything is about figuring out how to be a good Christian in this world. And it's not just something that the schools say is what their school is about. It's not just in the admissions brochures. It's what the students talk about desiring from their college experience. It's a very pervasive campus culture. Like, faith pervades campuses, and in a way that I didn't see anywhere else, and especially, you know, not at the Catholic colleges.
So how did their faith affect the courtship rituals that exist there? I mean, I think courtship is probably a fair word to describe what goes on.
Definitely. It's funny because all the people I interviewed had a chance to talk about romance in their journals, and they could describe their ideal understanding of romance or romantic encounter. And the romance that the vast majority of students who responded described was very chaste. It was very asexual. It involved a lot of talking, and a lot of talking in beautiful settings. And so so everybody seemed to desire that, both men and women. But the only people who are really actually living out that kind of romance in a regular way, or in a way that's really a part of campus culture, what evangelical colleges. And on one of the campuses I went to, campus walks was a very popular ritual. So they're very formal. It's a guy asking a girl always. A lot of the girls complained about that in the interviews, actually. They complained about the song and dance they have to go through if they like a guy, because they have to somehow
get him to ask.
Yeah, let him know without letting him know.
Yeah.
So, because that's sort of forbidden. So they felt frustrated by that. But essentially, it involves a guy asking a girl to walk for hours around campus, not even holding hands. It's just the spending time alone together. There were a lot of really, I think, what most would consider pretty extreme boundaries around sexual activity. And I met a lot of students who were practicing all sorts of, I guess they had designed their own boundaries or interpreted their own boundaries to, you know, what is okay or not okay to do sexually. And so I met students who had waited for an entire year to kiss their significant other, things like that. And so in the meantime, one of the things, some of the different behaviors they're engaging in is praying together, like literally sitting in prayer with each other, holding hands and praying. So if there is holding hands, it's often in prayer, and doing Bible study together. And going to chapel. So there are a lot of, you know, and then maybe spending time in dinner, a lot of group dating. So very, very different.
Yes, and I would imagine one of the challenges of applying this model, for example, to a Catholic school is that, as you said, it has very traditional roles for men and women. So you're kind of turning back the clock a bit that may be very difficult to do on another campus.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure that the rituals on Catholic campuses and other campuses may be really different, but the roles aren't so much, since we have women essentially. I mean, you really do have the double standard alive and well, and you have women expected to dress up like whores, but then still somehow be virginal because the guys expect virgins. I mean, that was absolutely the case on all these campuses. And so it may seem like you're setting the clock back, but I'm not really sure. So my biggest question is, the students that I interviewed, just pervasively, whether at Catholic schools or otherwise, really want to roll back the extreme nature of hookup culture. Like, it's not making them happy, but what seems to make them feel powerless is they have no idea how to do it. So I've, in my own classes, when I often teach about evangelical youth culture and the culture of sexual restraint and purity, and my students often, when they're exposed to this world, it's like fantasy land to them. It's like Jane Austen land, and they want to go there, you know, even though they don't necessarily want to go there, you know, all the way. Or some of the rituals they find a bit impossible or that they wouldn't want to enact, they still really fantasize about what would it be like to live in a world where guys still ask girls out, or where you could go out on 10 dates and still not worry about kissing somebody. And there really is that, I think, desire that's there, but they feel like it's impossible to put it into practice.
When you discuss this with students, are there anything that you can suggest to these young men and women to not necessarily recreate the evangelical school culture, but at least kind of move a little bit in that direction?
Well, I think the two things I've started to say at the beginning of all my classes, even if it has nothing to do with sex, is I tell my students that they should know that they should look around the room and they should know that probably every single person in this room that we're sitting in thinks that they need to participate in hookup culture and thinks that the person next to them thinks hookup culture is great. Except the reality is they're probably just pretending that they think that. And the reality is that they probably actually don't like it at all. And they really want to have a long-term committed relationship. And so that they should know that about each other, both men and women. Because I don't think the students know that about each other. And then the other thing that I have started to tell students is that they have a right to set boundaries. And not just, I think most colleges talk a lot about sexual assault in student life. But we're talking boundaries way beyond sexual assault, and boundaries, all kinds of boundaries, whether it's, you know, I'm not going to hook up with you, to, you know what, I'm not going to kiss you for a year, or I'm not going to kiss you for 10 dates, or, you know, we're going to just go out and talk for hours and hours 25 different times, and then we'll come back and think about whether or not we want to date. And so that they have a right to set boundaries, because they don't seem to know that.
I can imagine it's very difficult for these, you know, young, impressionable students at a difficult time in their lives trying to set their own boundaries, when historically boundaries were always set by society, by older people. I mean, are college administrators, could they do anything to help set any, especially Catholic schools, to set boundaries?
Well, I mean, theoretically, I think having, you know, all male halls and all female halls are, you know, these, but those aren't the kind of boundaries that work. I think one of the things that needs to happen is first an honest taking stock of what's going on campus. And I worry that administrators are afraid to really take a look at what's going on because of PR concerns. But I think first there needs to just be a taking stock of what's going on. And I often, when I first heard about pimps and hoes and CEOs and office hoes and all those parties, I went to talk to different administrators and I got the deer in headlights look, you know, of fear. And then a kind of brush aside generally, because people didn't really want to hear about it. So I think first seeing and finding out what's there, but then, you know, having conversations about who do we want to be, what culture do we want to have, what are some of the resources we want to draw from, you know, just really pushing students on, you know, is this the culture you want to be a part of, or do you want to change it? You know, is this who you are? And I found that students need find strength in numbers, except you need to give them the space, a safe space in which to articulate what worries them and concerns them without fear of getting in trouble or without fear of being left alone. And once you give them that space, they really start to express what they want.
Do Catholic administrators or teachers need to do a better job of teaching what the Catholic tradition holds on these subjects? Or do students generally have a good idea what the Catholic the church teaches?
Well, when I asked every single student, you know, what if they had a particular faith background that they had talked about initially, you know, at one point in the interview, I asked them what did they learn from their faith tradition about sex and about dating. And, well, evangelical Christians had very long answers on this. Pretty much nobody else had, you know, I would get one word answers or people would look at me quizzically. So most of the students I talked to who were Catholic would say things like, don't have sex, you know, or sex is bad, and don't be gay. Like, that was about the extent of what they thought. Many of them talked about the Catholic teachings about sex, regardless of what they actually knew about them, as archaic and irrelevant to their lives. You know, I don't think that has to be just, you know, people just throw up their hands and give up if that's what they hear. I think one of the things that I see happening in evangelical youth culture that is virtually absent, you know, from Catholics is just a huge, huge amount of resources that are out there, whether it's magazines or books or, you know, or podcasts or, you know, all sorts of movies that are geared toward young adults to navigate their dating and sex lives. And there's virtually nothing you can point to. And they're often written by, you know, 20-somethings or 18-year-olds. I mean, they're very, very young. So they're writing to their peers. And there seems to be an absence of that, I think, among Catholics. So I think one of the first things to do is to think about, well, how can we begin to create this conversation for Catholics? Because it seems to be absent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real problem for Catholics and for other religious groups. You're dealing now with a sociological phenomenon that didn't exist 50 years ago, where you have these people in their teens and 20s who are not getting married and are having relationships, and how to navigate that time in their lives. The church hasn't said too much about that. I mean, there is focus on married sexuality, but before that that period, there isn't much discussion, as you said.
Well, there's virtually no attention to dating, and I think it's because people are afraid that it's messy, yeah. And you know, there aren't easy answers here. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't talk about it. And I know just from doing this study, I had set out to try to interview 40 students total, one-on-one. That was my goal. And at the very end of the survey, students could volunteer, you know, if they wanted to participate in the one-on-one interview. And I think it was almost 600 volunteers.
Wow.
So there's a huge desire to, a lot of the students just wanted to know, what do religion and spirituality have to do with sex? Like, I think they were just curious. And they have no idea how to reconcile these things. They don't even know where to start, especially, I think, among Catholic youth. They feel like that you just have to divorce these things. They can't see any way in from, you know, when you sit there and, you know, when you think the Catholic teaching on sex is bad, and you're, you know, you're 19 or 20, then where in the world do you go from there? So I think just beginning to piece together some of these resources and conversations for youth would be a great way to start, and to stop being afraid of the messiness, I guess, of dating.
Well, Donna Freitas, thank you so much for coming into discussing this. This is a difficult topic, but one that I think we need to talk about as a faith community. So good luck with the book. Hope it does well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. Remind you that you can subscribe to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com, where you can also leave us comments, which we will occasionally read on the air. We also want to thank Bill McGarvey, who provided the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.